Maria Kanellis is our first pregnant 24/7 champion, and Seth Rollins gets beat to a bloody pulp. Your full Raw review starts right after this. Check out shoptofind.com, and you can find what you're looking for. And there's a wide range of products from health and fitness to car parts, beds, furniture, and even fashion, home and garden, tools and hardware, toys and games. It's a new simple shopping search site to help you find products listed by smaller retailers. All you have to do is type in what you're looking for, and it will shoot you to where you want to be. All retailers that are listed also provide phone and mailing addresses and, of course, have secure sites. This website does not collect personal data from shoppers, and the entire site is SSL secure. So, again, that is shoptofind.com. Pretty easy, right? Shoptofind.com, and find what you're looking for today.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. Your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. Thank you so much, guys, for joining me on this July 30th, 2019. It's almost August. Crazy. It's almost August, which means for you football fanatics out there and fantasy football fanatics, that's more where I fall. The season is upon us and it's closing in quickly. So pay attention to your injuries. Pay attention to the camps. Pay attention to the trades. Pay attention to your news ticker. Pay attention to other fantasy football podcasts because, boy, oh boy, things are about to heat up. But in the world of professional wrestling, things are heating up as we head towards SummerSlam, which is on August 11th. So we have, a week and 5 days or so until SummerSlam. And boy, did things heat up on Monday Night Raw last night as well, emanating from Little Rock, Arkansas. I got to start with the top story. Got to, right? And you want to hear it. You don't want to hear me talk about the things that are irrelevant. You want to hear me talk about the number one story coming out of last night's Raw. And that would be Brock Lesnar making an unadvertised appearance in Little Rock, Arkansas to completely destroy Seth Rollins. It's nice when they don't always advertise the stars because it makes Raw feel exactly what the name is. Raw, unedited, unscripted. And WWE has felt all but that over the last 5 years or so into a product that is too polished, too perfect, too structured, and too controlled into a more Raw product. Imagine that. And a much more wrestling-heavy show, which is always a good thing when you watch a wrestling show to see more wrestling. But that's the case here. It felt a little different. And from all the reports I'm hearing and seeing, this was the most heavily involved Raw that Paul Heyman has had since he became the executive producer, whatever it may be, whatever his title was, executive director, whatever it may be. He is basically leading the Raw creative, and this is the most that he has been involved in, and it felt different. And I gotta give WWE, I gotta give Paul Heyman, the creative, and Vince McMahon for probably stepping back on this one a thumbs up for the show. It focused on exactly what it should have: the stories in the ring, not the nonsensical stuff outside the ring, the poorly timed comedy, the overly scripted backstage segments. All of that needs to be sprinkled in, and it was. And it needs to be focused on wrestling, which it was. So, well done all around. And talking about this Brock Lesnar segment, man, that was, I'll tell you, that was one of the more uncomfortable segments I've seen in a while. To the point of, yikes, I was looking for a Seth Rollins injury report to come out. Or, you know, Seth Rollins has indeed sustained a legitimate injury. I've been watching wrestling since 1997, and that's 22 years ago. And I've seen brutal matches. I've seen bloodbaths. I've seen things that I probably shouldn't have ever seen, and putting wrestlers' lives and livelihood at risk. I've seen it all. And since 2008, when WWE implemented the PG policy, they have certainly softened that hardcore style, and rightfully so. Rightfully so, because the health and safety of the wrestlers, the men and women who leave their families for 250 to 300 days a year, that should be the focus of WWE and the wrestlers themselves, is trying to stay healthy the best that you can. Not just so that you can have a long-running career and be successful and make a lot of money, but because, hey, wrestling is a very small portion of your life, and you have to make sure that the injuries you sustain are minimal and not life-threatening and not life-altering, so that when you get out of the business, you're not in a wheelchair, you're not on crutches the rest of your life, you're not taking pain meds the rest of your life and developing an addiction, that you are, in fact, having a relatively normal life. And so I've seen it all. I've seen, again, things that I shouldn't. And since that soft PG product implemented itself, it's been very few and far between that we have seen matches and moments that make us feel uncomfortable, even for seasoned fans, for the, quote, hardcore fans. There haven't been a whole lot of those moments that you take a step back and go, oh my God, is he really okay? Is she really okay? And last night was one of those moments. One of those moments that you takes your breath away. You could say, did they really need to go that far? Did they really need to do that? And I would say yes, as long as it was done safely. And I'm sure Seth Rollins is bruised up. I'm sure he's beat up. I'm sure rolling out of bed this morning, he did not feel great. That's all true. But you have to remember that these guys are professionals, and things that look dangerous sometimes have a lower risk than things that aren't dangerous and have a higher risk. And in this case, something that was done to Seth Rollins of F5s on the brim of the chair, having the chair sit in a upright position and delivering an F5 to the ribs of Seth Rollins, man, he did a hell of a job. Both men did a hell of a job selling the brutality, particularly Seth Rollins, and not overdoing it with blood, just having a small capsule of blood in his mouth, not making it look over dramatic, but more of a realistic tone to it of, if you have internal injuries, you would bleed from the mouth. And he bled from the mouth. And again, it wasn't pouring all over the mat and making it graphic and TV-14, but boy, when Vince McMahon said they're going to have an edgier product, they are certainly dancing on the line of 14. And that's fine with me. That's fine with me. This rivalry feels more important and more personal than it did leading up to WrestleMania. And I love that. I love that because it makes me care about seeing SummerSlam more than I did when I first started the show. And that's what you want. If you're WWE, you want your audience to want to feel like they want to see your pay-per-view, which would mean subscribing to your network, which was the lifeblood of your company, more than they did when they started the show. And I would say mission accomplished, because now what do you want to see? You want to see Seth Rollins come back. You want to see him demolish Brock Lesnar. You want to see him get his revenge and put a beat down on Brock Lesnar. You want to see that. At least I do. And it makes me want to see it in a way that I didn't think I'd want to see it, because we've seen these two really at war now since before WrestleMania. And it's been, you know, a good, 4 to 6 months since they've been in a program of sorts, kind of in and out of the WWE programming. So it certainly revived the rivalry. It certainly amplified it. That's what we're looking for. That's what we want. And kudos to everybody involved. And the fact that after Seth was put in the ambulance, we all expected it to just drive off. How many times have we seen in storylines somebody get injured and the ambulance is there and they just kind of drive off and the camera lets them, you know, drive off? And Brock Lesnar standing in front of the ambulance, did anybody see that coming? Waiting for Seth and opening the doors and delivering another F5 onto the gurney. Man, oh man. Seth is bumped, battered, and bruised, and hopefully not injured. I don't believe he is, or we would have probably heard a report by now, but I'm sure he may actually have some legitimately bruised ribs. I mean, that's not out of the realm of possibility. Certainly not after the bumps he took, which were brutal. just brutal and lovely. Lovely. It was like a beautiful disaster. If you've heard that phrase before, it was a beautiful disaster. I loved it. On top of it, it also gave Dolph Ziggler heat. Don't forget about Dolph Ziggler here. Yes, the main focus should be on Brock and Seth and wanting to see Seth come back. He's probably going to have taped up ribs and he might show his face on Raw and limp to the ring or whatever. But if, and let me just say this, if they don't have Seth walk to the ring with taped up ribs, what are they doing? I mean, please. You can't overlook this one here. This was a beatdown by Brock Lesnar, one of the biggest MMA fighters of all time, one of the most celebrated combat sport athletes in the world. So you have to have Seth sell this one with taped up ribs and say it was bruised ribs or a fractured rib or something. But nonetheless, you also can't forget about Dolph Ziggler here, who was the catalyst for Seth Rollins taking the beating he did. Because he was the one holding the leg of Seth Rollins, so he wasn't able to defend himself in the onset of Brock Lesnar attacking him. So you can't forget that piece of it. And it made me so angry at Dolph, which is what we're looking for, and Brock, just with the brutal beatdown, the viciousness in which he did it, the mercilessness in which he did it, and even having Paul Heyman try to pull him back. And Brock not listening. I mean, just great stuff all around. I would give this segment an A. It was just so well done, and it made me care about the rivalry. It made me want to see SummerSlam. It made me want to see how Seth's doing, and it made me want to see Dolph Ziggler get his ass kicked. So, check, check, check. Mission accomplished. Well done to all involved. Beyond that segment, I mean, the next piece of Raw was, surprisingly, the 24/7 championship being one of the focal points of the show. And it was woven throughout the entire show with Maria Kanellis winning the championship after she demanded that her husband lay down for her so she could become champion. And Maria, who won it from Mike, who stole it from R-Truth after everybody jumped on the pile of R-Truth to have Mike Kanellis come out the victor after the tag team match at Open Raw, which was a nice way to open Raw, by the way. I know it doesn't have the biggest star power in the world, but with the video package that they put up for the 24/7 championship, I think added a little bit of credibility to it, to a title that is, of course, supposed to not be taken too seriously. But it was also a way to give you a quick history of the titles that have changed hands and the people that have held it. It's going to be interesting to see what the final number is of the people that have held that championship. I know it's been focused around R-Truth and Drake Maverick over the last couple of months. And rightfully so, they've had some pretty funny storylines and it's enjoyable and it's kind of turn your brain off humor. But the overall number of people that are going to hold this belt before it dies, I'd say it's over 100. I mean, I could see it going that long. I really could. But time will tell, and R-Truth is already a 10-time 24/7 champion. I love that stat that they pulled out of their pants on Monday night. He is a 10-time 24/7 champion. Good stuff there. It's great. So, we have, though, Maria Kanellis, who is the first ever pregnant women's champion. Well, first ever pregnant champion of WWE, I guess is how she phrased it, because she's not the women's champion. But so she essentially has immunity because she's pregnant, that nobody can really touch her. So what I'm looking forward to is, how do they get the belt off Maria? Does Mike Kanellis pin her in her sleep to get the belt back, and then you have somebody who can actually defend the belt? I don't know, but it is an interesting twist with Maria essentially being granted immunity because she's pregnant and that nobody can touch her. That is certainly an interesting twist. What's more interesting to me beyond that, where are they going with Maria and Mike? Where are they going? I don't know what's the end game. What is this possible endgame? for Maria and Mike? Is it kind of this femdom relationship that she has with Mike that was never established up until, three, 4 weeks ago when she admitted that, hey, you couldn't possibly be the father of my child or my children, and it's not your child. Dum, dum, dum. I mean, you know, where's Maury Povich? I feel like I should be on there at this point. I mean, it sounds like this storyline should end on the Maury show. But I don't know what the end game is here. And why would Mike Kanellis allow Maria to pin him when she admitted that basically she cheated on him and the child that she's carrying is not his? Lots of weird stuff going on. Again, I'm not sure where this ends or who benefits from this. Because you can't have Maria competing in a match. She is legitimately pregnant. So I don't know. Does anybody have any guesses? Like, what is the payoff? Maybe the creative team doesn't even know, and they're just kind of riding this one out. And then 1 week, all of a sudden, neither Mike or Maria are on the show, and they've just been moved to SmackDown unceremoniously, and the storyline is completely forgotten. I could see that happening, too, because my brain can't come up with something that this ends in a match with Maria, because it can't. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe we find out who Maria cheated on Mike with, who is the actual father of her child. Maybe that's the end game, and then it ends up in a match with Mike and the person that he cheated on her with, and then maybe the custody of the child is in limbo, or maybe it's another Rey Mysterio, Eddie Guerrero, Dominic situation. I don't know. I just can't think of anything else. So interesting, though. But email me, guys, realwwepodcast@gmail.com with your thoughts, or on Twitter @thewwepodcast to let me know what you guys think. Do you ever see this ending in some kind of sensical way? Because I just don't. Okay. Moving on to something a little more meaningful is Ricochet winning a gauntlet match that had Rey Mysterio, Sami Zayn, Cesaro, and Andrade accompany him. Cesaro started off strong, but of course, Mr. Battle Galactica, or whatever Cesaro is at this point, I don't know. And on a side note with Cesaro, boy, I get on these tangents, but I got to say it before I forget it. Cesaro needs to speak up, or the writers need to understand, or I'm sure Paul Heyman does, that the life or the career span of Cesaro is not forever. And the talent that he possesses in the ring is otherworldly. And if he could finally put it together with a gimmick or some kind of connection with the fans that's believable, this guy could be big money. I need, at this point, though, I don't know what he is. Again, he's Mr. Battlestar Galactica from, you know, some kind of techno-driven world. I don't know. They need to have him give us a little bit of who and what he is. Backstage promo. Give us a vignette. Maybe a pre-recorded promo. What's his mission? Why is he doing what he's doing? What is he after? Who is Cesaro? Maybe a little bit of a background. Maybe cover the fact that you haven't ever really found who you are, that you haven't felt that you have really achieved all you can achieve. Put a little bit of truth into this. Put some real emotion into this. Have Cesaro just speak his mind about his career in WWE in a holistic fashion and connect with the fans on that level, because we're all thinking it. He goes from Antonio Cesaro to The Bar, which is probably the most successful, although I still felt like he was playing a part, not being himself. And he was James Bond at one point he was Antonio Cesaro to James Bond to The Bar to Battlestar Galactica. And now, I don't know who and what he is. We know he's a good performer. He's very stiff in the ring. That's good. You can't see through his work. He's extremely strong. All that. But we don't know who you are, so we can't connect with you. So your entrances don't get us excited, but your matches do. So you got half of it. If he finds that other half, let me just tell you. It'll be like finding the other half of the silver monkey if you guys watched Legends of the Hidden Temple. It'd be like that. It'd be like finding the other half of the Shrine of the Silver Monkey. That's what it was. And the door opens and Olmec, you know, gives you your congratulations or whatever. I mean, anyway, I'm dating myself here. This is like early 90s, mid-90s Nickelodeon, okay? So I don't know why the hell I thought of Legends of the Hidden Temple as a analogy. But that's essentially what it is. He needs to find the other piece of his power coin. I feel like I'm about to get into a Power Rangers reference. So I will not, and I will continue on here. But Ricochet comes out on top here. So it is now Ricochet versus AJ Styles at SummerSlam for the United States title. I think that's a good choice. I think it might have been your only choice because the fans are behind Ricochet right now. He's essentially the embodiment of what the WWE style is today. At least the style that gets the "this is awesome" chants, which I think are a bit overdone. But Ricochet is kind of the leader of the new generation of the evolution of wrestling. And for better or worse, it's not my favorite, but I'm going to support it because I think it is the future of wrestling right now, is kind of a Lucha Libre-inspired, high-risk, high-acrobatics, very athletic type of style that is less on the selling, more on the spots, which you guys know I'm not a fan of. But I don't hate it. I just don't get emotionally invested in that kind of wrestling. And whether that is indeed the future of wrestling will be, of course, time will tell. But I think right now, Ricochet embodies that movement of WWE, of where they're headed. Which is why the fans get behind him. He's, again, I've said this before, he's a good-looking dude. Always helps. He seems comfortable on the mic. That also helps. And he's just incredible athleticism in the ring to the point of he actually might be part superhuman. It's just insane. So all of that, you wrap it all together and you have a recipe for a very white meat, traditional baby face. And I'm really looking forward to the match with him and AJ Styles. This would be, what, the third time that they've met together? Which means they've had more time in the ring together. Of course, live events between now and then will help. I'm sure they're getting their in-ring work together in now. And I expect an even better match than they've had in the last two encounters. And that's just natural, right? I mean, who wouldn't expect a better match? Of course, if they're not given enough time and you go out there and Vince says, "Oh, you guys got 8 minutes, maximize your minutes." That's a little unfair because then it's going to be rush, 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 get my stuff in, hit my spot, I got to hit my spot, false finish. I don't need that. I want them to get 20 minutes plus on this match. Take their time. Start with chain wrestling. Go to the chops. Then somebody throws a punch and it becomes personal. And then they start going to bigger moves, false finish, high impact, bigger moves, and then the ultimate false finish, and then the finish, whatever that may be. I mean, it doesn't have to go exactly like that, but you guys know what I'm saying. Like, I don't want a microwave match. I want an oven type of match. I don't want an instantaneous match or a match that needs to be rushed. I need to kind of preheat the oven, get your food ready, okay? Maybe take the packaging off if you got a frozen meal there. Place it in, close the door, set the timer, and then your food always tastes better when it's oven-baked, does it not? Always. Almost always. And that's the kind of match I want with these two. And that's how I think they can maximize their potential here, is not just worry about the spots and the kickouts, but the evolution of the match, the psychology of the match. How do you build up to X move and Y move? When you look at today's product, everybody, almost always, begins with kicks and punches, punch, 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 kick, power move. Whatever happened to the chain wrestling? Whatever happened to that? It's a lost art. It doesn't. I'm not saying every match has to be chain wrestling. And some guys and gals, that's not their forte. And that's not how they were produced and brought up and trained in the performance center. I understand that. But anybody who can do that and do it well is a skill that is a lost art that is valuable because fewer people have it. So I would really love to see that and not just go for the high impact punches and kicks right off the bat that every single match starts out as. So that's just my two cents. But I'm looking forward to the match. And does Ricochet regain? Not an easy call. Certainly not an easy call. My predictions will come next week. So keep an eye out for that, by the way. The Usos versus the OCs versus the Revival. Is it any surprise that the Usos took the three count here? Specifically, Jimmy Uso. Is it any surprise? I'm sure it's just coincidence that Jimmy took the fall here. I'm sure it's just a complete coincidence that Jimmy Uso gets arrested for a public intoxication or a DUI. And then the following TV taping, he's the one that takes the fall. We'll just chalk it up to coincidence, right? Right. Wink, wink, nod, nod. But the Usos take the pinfall. The OCs, the original clique, meaning the Good Brothers or whatever they are this week, are now the new tag team champions. I think that's good. The Usos or the Revival can claim that they've never lost because they never got pinned, but that's the match. That's the rules of the triple threat. And WWE will always be quick to remind you of the rules of a triple threat. So the OCs, the original clique, Gallows and Anderson, are your new Raw Tag Team Champions. And now the clique, the original clique, has all the gold, at least in the mid-tier portion of the roster, right? Because the true top belt on Raw is still lying on the shoulders of the Beast. But they've established the clique as legitimate. I'm glad that there was a change made with the tag belts. It makes sense. The Revival, I'm sorry, as good as they are, fundamentally sound in the ring, they have a massive disconnect with the main roster here. They may have really connected with the fans in NXT, but that's a different breed of audience. You know, when you come to the main roster, things don't always translate. And they just don't seem to be translating right now for the Revival. And it's a shame because there's a lot there. There's a lot they could do there. I just think, kind of like Cesaro, they're very, very, very vanilla. You're just kind of wrestler A and wrestler B. I don't know your mission outside of briefly assimilating and affiliating with Shane and who was it? Drew McIntyre. Briefly, I don't know who and what you are. Give us something. There's no substance to those two, at least on the main roster, especially if you haven't seen them before. There's just nothing there. There's nothing to grasp onto other than, yeah, they're pretty good in the ring. If you didn't watch them in NXT, you would just go, yeah, they're okay. Like, that's what you would say because you know nothing else. Because WWE has not afforded them the opportunity to build their character in front of the audience in terms of giving the audience a personality to understand and understand who and what they are. So I think that's, they're kind of in the same boat as Cesaro. Okay. Moving down the line here, we got Becky Lynch versus Alexa Bliss. And the winner here is Becky Lynch, but only because Alexa seemed to fake an injury with the referee, and so Becky was declared the winner because Alexa could not continue. That led to Nikki Cross getting in the face of Becky and challenging her to a match, which the announcers just suddenly knew, even though they were just arguing. They were like, oh, it looks like she's challenging her to a match. Well, how do you know? You know, how do you know that, Michael Cole? I mean, nobody said explicitly and loudly and clearly, I'm challenging you to a match right here and right now. It was just a bunch of yelling. It was just Michael Cole's assumption and boy, I don't know if he gained fortune teller abilities, but that's exactly what happened. So we get Alexa Bliss, Becky Lynch and Nikki Cross in a match, which ended in, again, a victory for Becky Lynch coming via the way the DQ, because Natalya ended up interfering, attacking Becky Lynch and giving her the sharpshooter as payback for earlier in the night before Raw went on the air, with Fit Finley training some of the women, and Becky Lynch comes in with the disarmer in an empty arena and gives Natalya her finishing maneuver and attacks Fit Finley. Now, this is just something that I noticed, and something that I want your guys' opinion on, and maybe I'm reading too much into it. Are WWE, or is WWE, starting to plant the seeds for a Becky Lynch heel turn? The reason I say that is, number one, she's not nearly as hot as she was. And that's not due to the fans, that's due to creative completely just botching her momentum. But number two, Becky Lynch is obnoxious. And I mean, I'm a Becky Lynch supporter, but I'm more of the Becky Lynch heel supporter. I cheer for her when she had that personality. Not the version of the WWE babyface Becky Lynch. And lately she's been very obnoxious with her... I don't know why she uses the word dope. I mean, is she one of the seven dwarves? I'm not a fan of the dope comment. You got to come up with something a little cooler than that. Nobody that I know has ever called anyone a dope. And I've been like, wow, oh my God, that's so funny. That's so clever. That's great. I love that. Oh my God, that's such an insult. Or that's funny. The only reaction I have to that word is, that's lame. Just lame. And she's acting very heelish with Nikki. Or with Alexa. Standing there just begging Alexa to punch her. That's what heels do. I don't know. Something's just not sitting right with me. And it could be me overthinking it. But do you guys think that Becky Lynch is going to turn heel? Is WWE planting the seeds for that? Let me know what you guys think. Hit me up on Twitter at the WWE Podcast, or on our email at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Maybe I'm overthinking it. But so Natalya gets revenge and puts Becky in the sharpshooter. And Becky doesn't tap, but Natalya is, I think, being the babyface in this scenario as well. She's just getting payback for Becky Lynch attacking her during a training session. And again, this is kind of fits my case of Becky possibly turning heel. She's obnoxious. She is acting heelish with Alexa, who didn't do anything to her, and mocks her like, I can take you on anytime, take your best shot. And then attacks Natalya during a training session and attacks Fit Finley to boot. I mean, there's just something not right here. If someone's trying to script her as a babyface, they're doing a piss poor job of it, because that's not how you get a babyface over. If you remember what got Becky Lynch really over, of course, we all know it was when WWE tried to turn her heel, which is the irony of this whole thing. But when WWE tried to go, oh, okay, you want her as a babyface? Well, okay, fine, we'll go with it. Let's give you what you want. Let's turn her babyface. But by turning her your version of a babyface is actually turning her back heel. Because WWE doesn't understand, for the most part, or didn't, or maybe still doesn't, what truly makes up a babyface and what truly makes up a heel. And when Becky Lynch turned heel, she was this badass rebel. It was years of frustration, years of misbookings coming out and just beating people just decisively, beating their ass, becoming the female version of Stone Cold to some degree. And then they softened her, trying to make her funny, putting with Seth Rollins and trying to humanize her and doing these silly, cute lines and trying to soften the version of Becky Lynch that we all knew and loved and got behind and was white hot before WrestleMania. So, I don't know. Again, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. It's an interesting conversation to have, that's for sure. And I'm sure I will have that conversation later this week with my co-host Anthony DeMarco. So very, very interesting deal there. All right, well, let's move on down the line here of what happened on Monday Night Raw. And next up on the list, we've got Seth Rollins and Dolph Ziggler again. It ended with Brock Lesnar coming out to attack, but they are focusing a lot on Dolph Ziggler here. And by the way, I think this wild card rule is going bye-bye. No one's paying attention to it. The announcers aren't even addressing that it exists anymore. I think we can officially say the brand split is done. And I'm fine with that. The brand split is done. It's over. It allows storylines to flow naturally from one night to the next. And you can still feature newer stars on SmackDown. You don't have to bring every storyline from Raw into SmackDown. So the argument that, well, if you get rid of the brand split, that's not giving newer guys who would have got the opportunity with a brand split to showcase their skills and build new stars. But here's the counter argument to that. Raw is 3 hours. You keep Raw as is, okay? You still have time to feature new stars and bring their stories over to SmackDown. So my point is you can bring over the storylines that you choose from Raw to SmackDown the next night. I mean, you have a three-hour show and a two-hour show. You're not going to put all the storylines that happen on Raw and continue them into SmackDown. SmackDown needs to feel like it has its own identity. And that's how you do it. So, I mean, I'm fine with this brand split being over because I don't need the wild card version of it. And WWE just cannot help themselves when it comes to brand splits. They just can't. They can't not cross over stars. They just can't. And if there were a true brand split, I would love it. But I don't want a half-assed version of it. I don't need a kind of a brand split. Well, are you fish or fowl? Are you brand split or are you not? I need it one way or the other, and I need it defined. So I'm fine with this brand split being over. The wild card rule gets flushed down the toilet where it completely belongs. And we are back to the good old days of just one format, one platform of two shows, and not having this faux rivalry. Please. It's silly. I don't need Raw versus SmackDown. There's no true rivalry there. Y'all are working for the same company. And how do you win? If you win, what does the other show go away? Which then overall hurts the company and inadvertently and directly hurts your show? Because viewership's down? I mean, so that's a topic for another day, too. I probably should not get into the Raw versus SmackDown war that WWE has tried to manufacture over the years, because even in fake storyline professional wrestling world, that's not a rivalry that's even close to believable, even in fantasy land. That's how far out it is. That's saying something. Okay, moving down the line here. I also want to talk about Roman Reigns here. And the end of the show, we had Samoa Joe come out for this Samoan Summit that was canceled. And it really just ended up in a brawl with Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns and Cedric Alexander. So it was just interesting, too. I mean, you had the Usos come out and then the Revival make the save to even the odds. And it was one big brawl. Ends with Joe getting a double super kick from the Usos, and then Roman Reigns getting a spear to end the show. So if you think Roman Reigns is going anywhere, he may not be in the title picture, he may not be in any title picture, but it all still feels like Roman Reigns is the focus of WWE. It just still feels like that. He's not carrying a belt, but I get the feeling that WWE is purposely trying to keep him out of the title situation so that we'll start to appreciate the fact that, oh, WWE's not shoving Roman Reigns down our throats. So, yeah, he's not champion. So that's cool. He can do his own thing. But I'm, like, aware of that. I mean, being aware that they're trying to do that to try to make us divert our attention from that story, it's kind of like a weird reverse psychology thing. And it just seems as if we are living in this world that WWE created. And since Roman Reigns debuted on the scene and the Shield split apart, there has been one road and one path. And it will always lead that way, no matter how many times you get off the exit or take a detour or there's an accident on the highway or someone's pulled over. It just always, 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 always has felt and still feels to this day that all roads lead to Roman Reigns. It just still feels that way. And I am a Roman Reigns supporter to the point of I would hire him in a blink of an eye. He's just miscast. He doesn't belong to be a babyface. I'll leave it at that before I go on a rant. And it just always feels like that because they give subtle hints of that. Okay, he's not in the championship match, but he ends Raw. He main events Raw. He always main events Raw. He main events house shows. He main events SmackDown how many times? Even if he's not in a title situation, there's still the underlying current of, yeah, he's not in a title situation, but he's really our guy. He's really our guy. We're going to put him in main event. It's like kind of that whisper that you hear, that you know that's the truth. Even if they're showing us one thing, it's like smoke and mirrors. So, Roman Reigns closes Raw, and Samoa Joe once again ends up on his back. And while I wasn't a fan of that, I appreciate the fact that Raw ended in a different way. You had Cedric Alexander, who was featured. That I do like. I like that Cedric Alexander is getting some airtime, which you know, when was the last time Cedric Alexander main evented Raw? Okay, I mean, beyond showing up as the janitor, right, and fooling Shane McMahon only to lose, which made no sense. But Cedric Alexander's being featured. That's cool. I don't know the purpose of him because he's kind of like a 205 Live guy. I don't know what the end game is with him either. But I appreciate the fact that there's new faces on the show and new faces that close Raw, even though the one face that closes Raw is the lasting face that closes Raw, and that is Roman Reigns getting the one-up to close Raw to send the fans home happy. And that's, at least in Vince's perception, what happened on Raw. So, quite an eventful Raw. Again, I really enjoyed the fact that it felt different, that it was a wrestling-heavy Raw. It wasn't a promo-filled Raw that was just all, it was like all sizzle and no steak. This one felt different. It felt like it had different direction. It felt like it had a different leader. And from what I'm reading, it did. And that Paul Heyman had a lot to do with this Raw. And to be honest, the writers have to be happy about this. Creative has to be happy about this. Why? Because they don't have to sit there and try to manufacture a promo for a guy or a gal that needs to be revised 40 times. You can just have, hey, here's the match we want. Here's the finish. You guys figure out the rest. Boom. Easier creative, easier to understand. You let the guys and gals use their own brains to come up with filling in the gaps of the 75% of, oh, wow, how do you want to start this match? What do you want to do? Okay, we know we have to get here at the end, but how do you want to get there? It lends itself to guys and gals being more creative and ends up being a better show. And the stories are told in the ring. You can have promos. You can have backstage segments. It's just the volume in which they have been used over the last 5 to 10 years has outweighed what actually should be focused on. And that's the 20 by 20 ring. So, I mean, I think that has just been a nagging problem that at least for the time being, for one night, has been resolved. And I'd like to see that trend continue. We don't always need a 20-minute to 30-minute promo to open Monday Night Raw that ends in a match that we all know is going to be the main event. It's just it's the same formula. And they acknowledged that this week. And they certainly started out in a much different fashion with R-Truth and Carmella going against Drake Maverick and his wife. It was much different. And I appreciated that. As much as the 24/7 championship is just kind of laughable at times, it certainly felt different, and that's what we're looking for. All right, well, guys, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a blast. Tomorrow I'll be back with the SmackDown Live review, and then Thursday, of course, will be my co-host joining me for the wrap up of the week and the conversation that is always a blast. I mean, all three, I love all three of my co-hosts. They're just so much fun to talk to, and I think the conversations are enjoyable, and hopefully they're enjoyable for you guys. And of course, also too, there's an NXT podcast looming in the wings that I will not be doing, that I'm still looking for a possible host, and I have some candidates out there. So keep that in your mind, and keep tuned to the station. Keep tuned to my Twitter feed as well at the WWE Podcast, and check out the website at WWEpodcast.com. And if you'd like to support the show, by the way, easy, super easy way to do it, and it doesn't cost you a thing, is go to the website. I added a support the show tab, and if you do shopping on Amazon, all you got to do is go through that link, and anything you buy, the show gets a small commission on. Again, there's no extra fee. There's nothing hidden. It's just you buy what you normally were going to. You just start through that link, and it credits the show with whatever you were going to buy. So really appreciate anybody who does that, and thank you in advance. So, guys, thank you so much for joining me. And as always, I'll talk to you next time.